Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 14th day of May, Anno Domini 2022, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, you got enough shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. I'm very excited. This week I wrote a little Python program that puts a larger clock on my screen. So now I don't have to go, it's 6 minutes after the hour. All right, Microsoft.
That's called getting old, I think.
Yeah, it's getting older.
Yeah.
Yeah. Microsoft has announced that all major versions of Windows are vulnerable to a new zero-day attack, which means it's happening.
Wait a minute.
Were you sitting?
Let me grab a hold of something.
How's your heart?
Really?
You're not kidding. To a new zero-day attack, the company confirms that there has been an exploitation detected, and you need to take action now. Microsoft disclosed the new threat as part of its May 2022 Patch Tuesday update. Notice that even though this was out in the wild, Microsoft waited until Patch Tuesday to put... Never mind. That's all right. Yeah. This Patch Tuesday update contains fixes for 75 flaws across its products. That's not even this year's biggest. That's actually pretty small for Microsoft.
Yeah.
Across its products and platforms, including 3 zero-day vulnerabilities. Of the three, the big news is CVE-2022-26925, which has been actively exploited and impacts Windows 7, Windows 8.1, Windows 10, Windows 11, and all Windows Server versions. That is to say, every version of Windows that exists. Now, somebody's going to call in and say, doesn't have Windows 95. They didn't test Windows 95. They don't care about Windows 95.
But it probably still affects it.
It probably affects it because what it's affecting is that base NT underlying kernel that has been around since then.
Yep.
As it stands, Microsoft is limiting information about this zero day and has only described it in general terms as well as confirming that it has been exploited in the wild. And I quote, publicly disclosed? Yes. Exploited? Yes. Latest software release, exploitation detected, which is their way of saying it's everywhere, it's in everything, it needs to be fixed. The big takeaway of this is that it has the potential to allow hackers to gain elevated privileges right up to the identity of a domain controller. This is the holy grail for hackers because it gives them the right to perform any action on your PC and literally anything. In isolation, Microsoft has assigned the flaw as carrying a CVSS severity rating of 8.1 out of 10, but this can rise to 9.8 out of 10 when used in conjunction to attack other computers and servers on a network. So it's not just you. If you get caught, all the computers on your network get caught. Also worth your attention are 5 vulnerabilities. Microsoft states carry only a critical designation, that's all. And again, impact Windows 7, 8.1, 10, 11, and all Windows Server versions. Microsoft states that the May 2022 Patch Tuesday update is rolling out to all users over the coming weeks. So if you haven't got yours yet, don't worry about it. It's only being actively exploited in the wild, and it'll take a while to get to you. Remain calm.
Yeah.
To jump the queue and trigger the update manually, go to Settings, Windows Update, check for updates. Over 400 flaws have now been found in Microsoft's platform since the first of this year, January 1, 2022. So it remains imperative that you keep your system up to date at all times. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is major new Windows Zero Day exploit. And your choices are, I'll patch immediately, I've already patched, what else is new, meh, going commando, baby, and other. So far, we've got 24 votes in the poll. What else is new is currently ahead, followed by I've already patched, followed by meh. Those of you who are not on Windows should all just pick meh. That's how that works. But I know that if you picked other or if you just have more to say, head on over to our website at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right and under fascinating stuff, you'll see the forum. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 14 May 22, major new Windows Zero Day exploit. And of course, as always, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Operator is standing by.
And that's why I still can't learn Linux fast enough.
Exactly right.
I keep playing each week more and more with my Pi 400. And learning more and more about Xubuntu, and it's great. I mean, the software packages and everything else out there. It's,
yep, thousands and thousands of them.
Yeah, and the updates, they're up there.
I updated this thing. I'm running Xubuntu on this as well. I didn't update it for a while. Well, hold on, I'd admit that. So I updated it this morning while I was eating breakfast. That consisted of saying, check for updates. Yes, I want my updates.
Install.
Reboot.
Yeah.
That was all. That was it. Done.
Yeah. Just comes back and says, okay.
The only reason I had to reboot is because there was an actual kernel update. And I've not set this up to not have to reboot after kernel updates.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I haven't. So, yeah. So I actually had to reboot. It was not that big a deal. If you are running Windows, the simple fact is you are, right this second, vulnerable to this. And again, look, you may say to yourself, well, don't want me, I'm not important, blah, 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 whatever that is.
The reality is, they can use you as a gateway.
They will take every machine they can get. And again, the reason is it's all automated. There's no point where some human is saying, oh, that guy's not important. It's all strictly by robot.
And that's the thing. What people, you know, like you were saying, though, they say, well, yeah, I've got nothing important. But, yeah, they can use your machine to spread their stuff.
Exactly.
And they can, by just putting it on your machine, they can have it remotely going out to other thousands of people that are on your contact list to infect them.
Right. They'll take anything they get. You've got space on your machine, they want it.
They'll go for it. Yep.
You hear about botnets of 100,000 computers or 200,000 computers. Where do you think they're coming from? Just random people that got clicked on the wrong thing or got sent a malicious email.
Right.
And it's running in the background, and a lot of folks don't realize it. Yep. Because, again, they're not doing any systems check, not checking for spyware, malware, everything. No, I won't get infected.
You complain about how slow your computer is. Well, that could be one of the reasons.
Yeah,
right. So if you have not updated, particularly if you have not updated in a while, you should do this update. I know people don't like to be first. They want to wait for somebody else. Well, while you're waiting for somebody else, those 100,000 botnet, 100,000 computer botnet,
yep,
could be getting you.
Field day.
Yep, exactly right. Exactly right. And once you're gotten, you're gotten. So be aware. Be careful. Windows is not secure. It has never been secure. It has been 400 times not secure just this year alone.
Mm-hmm.
And 75 times this month. So Be aware that's sitting there waiting for you.
It's like every month on Microsoft's Patch Tuesday, 100 new vulnerabilities are fixed.
Yep.
Some of them may have been discovered by good guys and reported, but a lot of them are discovered by bad guys before they're ever found by the good guys.
Right.
And that's no big deal. 100 new problems every month are fixed.
That's not a big deal for them. It really is not.
Can you print yet on Windows? Or are we still under print nightmare?
No. Pretty much you can print. Some people can't. But
oh, did you hear about the Excel bug? Not Excel, Exchange. Another Exchange bug.
Oh, yeah.
The Y2K22 bug that they broke their date. And so on January 1st, all Exchange servers died and couldn't send any mail anymore. So Microsoft issued a patch to allow December 33rd, 34th, 35th, 36th to come along. So they've got 99 days, which I think we're just about of now, aren't we?
Pretty much.
Yeah, before they release a patch to fix the patch.
Microsoft is... Oh, there it is. Now we're live. One of the things that Microsoft has been telling their... their investors for a year and a half, maybe 2 years now, is that they are working toward an online version of Windows. Mm-hmm. They want everybody to move to an online version of Windows. One of the main reasons for that is exactly this.
Mm-hmm.
If they can have one copy of Windows that they can patch and update quickly, these kinds of problems theoretically will go away.
I don't believe that.
So that is the thing they continue to work toward. Will it happen? Probably not. I mean, what Steve just said, the Exchange server.
Yeah.
It's their Exchange server. It's running on their Microsoft Azure cloud.
And this bug was probably instituted 20 years ago when it was originally written and nobody noticed.
Right.
You don't need a signed integer for the date.
Exactly. But now they've got to go through and fix that. And it's been months and they still haven't. Come on, people.
Well, the other big issue, too, is, trying to say, okay, you know, you're going to do everything up on the cloud, you know, cloud base. That is going to be very problematic for folks that, are still using the phone company to get onto their internet. Or they're still doing, and this does happen, dial-up.
Right.
You know, it'd be horrific for them to try to do anything Windows-based. You compare that on your machine versus then going up to the internet and trying to do something, you know how that could slow down. Well, if you're now running everything, you would basically have your PC as a dumb terminal. You would turn it on. It would have to go in and dial up and get connected to the internet, just like if you were at work quite often. You know, back in the old days, you just turn on your terminal and it would connect automatically to the server. Well, that's what you would do with your home computer. You'd turn it on, it would automatically connect, and you do everything back up there, word processing, the whole nine yards, folks.
Right. And you can do that now with things like iCloud and not what they call it.
iWork. iCloud, Google Drive, Microsoft Docs.com. Right, yeah.
You can do it through that, but that is your choice. When you do not have a choice, that's a problem. There are still a whole lot of people who are on dial-up. There are still a whole lot of people who have very, very sporadic internet access. Starlink was supposed to fix that. Yeah, no.
No, it didn't.
Elon Musk didn't manage that one.
Well, they've only got 3,000 satellites up. They need 15,000.
and he's way too busy sending his phallic rocket into space to worry about you
Bezos.
And your internet connection. Oh, that's right. That's Bezos. but so there's... Giving you the choice to buy a Chromebook or use the online services is your choice. When you don't have a choice and you are on spotty, if not simply bad, internet connection, that's a problem. That's a genuine problem.
Especially if you're out in rural areas where, they're not going to run fiber out your way anyways anytime soon, if ever.
Right,
because it's just not cost effective.
Look, when you're on fiber like we all are, when you're on green light or whatever your fiber is in your area, you have almost instantaneous access to stuff. So loading something from the cloud is just as easy as loading it and just as quick as loading it from your own computer. So great. You don't even notice the difference.
Yep.
But when you're living in one of those rural areas where you are not constantly connected, or you have intermittent connectivity, or you pay by the byte. My sister-in-law lives in rural Arizona. The only internet access they have is their Verizon, what do they call it? MiFi,
cellular-based internet.
Cellular-based internet. They pay through their nose for that. So they're very careful what they do.
Mm-hmm. See, the cell companies are good to give you free unlimited minutes, but you pay a buck a K or whatever it is for data.
Right. So they have to be very careful what they do and how they do it. If Microsoft becomes a solely internet-based product, they're going to have to pay an awful lot of money every time they boot up their computers. About that.
And imagine the salesman not explaining that well enough.
Right.
You know, but that's still astonishing to me, though. You know, here, third world, and we've discussed this before, third world countries have faster, even in rural areas.
And cheaper
internet service than we do here in the U.S.
We have so much legacy copper, 150 years of copper buried in the ground and strung along wires that it's inertia.
Right.
Well, that's why
internet providers don't have any incentive to change, because there's no competition in almost every city.
Right.
Well, that's where, like right now in Rochester, if you've noticed, they're going around doing a massive upgrading of the poles. All the poles have to be a lot taller now.
Right.
Because of putting so much stuff on these poles. Your internet and your phone and everything else, you know, the distance between it was getting too much interference, and trying to run your power lines and your phone lines. Some folks still have phone lines in that. And now with the higher speed internet, you know, they've had to go through, and they're literally, you'll see it throughout the whole city, coming through your area and putting up a lot taller telephone poles.
Yeah. And in fact, we just had the phone company come through and remove a whole bunch of limbs from trees in our backyard. Actually, the guy behind us, but same thing. And I asked him, you know, are you guys going to replace the poles? He said, soon, very soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going through. I say that just last year they came through my yard, and right on straight through and putting up a 40, it looks like 40 footers.
Yeah.
To get it up higher. Because
you should ask them if you can run one of your antennas up the pole while they're there.
They already took care of it. While they were up
only 40 feet?
Yeah.
No, while they were there, I don't mind telling this story. While they were there, there's a tree.
It's only 12 meters.
By that pole. And I did have two lines strung up in there. And the guy was going up with a bucket. He goes, do you mind if I come down your driveway? It'd be easy to get to it. I said, only one thing. He goes, what's that? I said, would you mind, while you're up there in that bucket, taking those two ropes, instead of being over this branch, move them on over and drop them over down this one straight for me so there won't be run around. He goes, you want us to trim them up a little bit too? Yeah, if you don't mind.
Sure, why not?
And they did. Well, because they had to... I also lucked out because some of the old branches ripped the power line off that was coming from the pole to my garage. It ripped it away, and they wound up, because they had to lengthen it, rehooked it all up for me. So,
nice.
Cool.
Yeah, we kind of joke about that in the airplane world and the rocket world, is make friends with the power company or the phone company with a cherry picker. You're going to need them someday.
You're going to need them.
Well, I needed a cherry picker again because I got to rent one, I think, and put it down because I got to straighten out a couple antenna wires.
Yeah. I told you we had, with the last big storm, we had the wind storm that came through.
Mm-hmm.
Giant branches came down from our scrap trees, which I just want them gone, but and took down our all our wires. Now, cable and electric remain connected. I lost fiber, and I thought it was just the fiber that had gone out, because it happened late at night. Mm-hmm. And we still had electric and we still had cable. So I assumed it was just the internet. And then the next morning I realized that it had taken it down. Now, that leaves me, of course, with live electrical lines in my pond.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the first time this has happened.
Yeah, nope.
So I called up RG&E, and they know me. They said, "Oh yeah, we'll be right out." And they were out very quickly. So they came out, and we had them and cable and internet and phone company. We just had the phone company people just take the lines away. We don't have a landline anymore. Why do I need them? I just don't need them strung up there. But everything else got strung back up. And then in the meantime, the guy had said, you know, I'm going to put in a request to trim some of this stuff. And what are you going to do about all the stuff that fell? And I said, well, we already made contact with a company to come and do that. Because it's a lot. I mean, it's a lot. So mm-hmm. we're just going to have them trim all the scrap trees way down and take out the branches. And there's
clean one, out all the dead stuff.
All the dead stuff. And,
yep.
and you know, there's one of the trees is looks. There's this whole side that looks a little weak. I'm going to have them take that whole thing away. And, you know, so that is all getting done. But, yeah, then a couple of days later, they were trimming those back things, and that's when I asked them, and they said, yeah, eventually. He said, I don't know the schedule, but they will be doing that.
Yeah, they wound up doing that about 4 years ago in my backyard.
Yeah.
It was my neighbors that saw it during the winter months. Evidently, the trees had been rubbing on the power poles, and in the middle of the night, they saw this arcing.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And that's right over my roof.
Yeah, that's not
at
good.
The time was where, you know, I had the motorcycle in there, the tractor.
Oh, the roof of your garage.
Yeah. If that had caught on fire, that would have been one big bang, because, like I say, I've got the tractor in there. I had the motorcycle at the time, a propane tank. My grill was in there.
Propane accessories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have a propane heater out there. If I wanted to, I've got this big old 40-gallon propane tank.
Ooh, that's a big boom.
Yeah.
Big
boom. Oh, there would have been no garage, nor my neighbor's garage, or yeah. who knows what. Yeah, that would have, but I was so thankful for them. So when they came by, they left me a note and said, well, we're going to take care of these trees. And I had three options. Trim it up. Take down, doesn't matter how much we take down, or just totally remove. I checked. Totally remove.
Sure.
And they clipped them right on down, got rid of three trees back there.
Nice.
That were all scruffed, like you were saying, they, you know, branches and all. Gone.
Yeah. They were,
headache.
Most of the trees in our backyard are volunteer trees, as we call them. They were not things we planted on purpose, or the people before us really planted on purpose.
They just showed up.
They
walked in one day.
Yeah. All right. That music tells us that it is time for a quick break. But don't go too far, because we're going to come back with a whole lot more Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. Give us a call, 585-966-5299, 1-800-790-0415. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. If you're on the line, stay on the line. We're going to read the news first, because we've dumped on Microsoft. It's time to dump on Apple, too.
We're an equal opportunist.
We are. A number of newer Apple devices are carrying a unique flaw eerily reminiscent of Spectre Meltdown that could allow threat actors to steal sensitive data, according to experts. A team of researchers from the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, Tel Aviv University, and the University of Washington have discovered a flaw in a feature unique to Apple Silicon. This is the M1 chip and all of that.
Family, yeah.
Called Data Memory Dependent Prefetcher, or DMP. The flaw possibly affects a whole host of Apple Silicon, including their own in-house M1 and M1 Max chips. Not to worry, though, yet. The idea behind the DMP is to boost system performance by prefetching data even before they're needed, data that are essentially at rest. Usually, due to security reasons, data would be limited and split between various compartments and only pulled out when needed. With DMP, data get fetched in advance, and it's these data that can be accessed by unauthorized third parties, similar to the Spectre Meltdown flaw. With the latter, however, the silicon would try to speculate which data could be used in the near future, somewhat limiting the attack surface. With Apple's DMP, the entire contents of the memory could be leaked. The researchers named the flaw Augury. So far, Apple's A14 system on a chip found in the 4th generation iPad Air and 12th generation iPhone devices, the M1 and the M1 Max, were all found to be vulnerable. While they're suspecting older silicon, M1 Pro and M1 Ultra, for example, might also be vulnerable to Augury, they've only managed to showcase the flaw on these other endpoints. Apple is allegedly fully aware of discovery, which it has reportedly discussed with the researchers, but has yet to share any mitigation plans and patch timelines. Right now, there's only so much to be worried about, the researchers are saying, as they haven't demonstrated any end-to-end exploits with Augury techniques yet. So, no malware, at least not right now. Be worried when the next round of attacks using Augury come out. How safe do you feel with your Apple products? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, there's a lot of issues have been cropping up about trying to prefetch data and to guess, you know, predictive branching that the chip makers and software makers are trying to make software faster with.
Right.
And I was reading that Google Chrome is trying to back out some of that optimization stuff because computers are so fast already,
right,
that, you know, what does it matter if it's a tenth of a second faster,
right,
if it introduces a potential vulnerability?
Exactly. And we may find that Apple will do that. The problem, yeah, is, of course, that's right in the chip.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got to patch the microcode, yep, above the chip, which certainly is going to slow things down.
Yeah, that's been the problem with the Intel chips and Spectre and Meltdown, is,
right,
going to wait for the next generation design the chips,
right,
to remove that.
Right. So it is a problem. It is not, at least in Apple's case, those of you with Apple systems, it is not a current problem. But, of course, now that it's been talked about, we'll start seeing those,
yeah,
exploits pretty quick. So be aware that you need to be more careful as to what you click on and all the stuff you're supposed to be more careful about anyway. But I know that a lot of Apple people aren't, because they think they're safe. You're not, and now you need to be aware of that. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Rich, what's up?
I just acquired a beautiful HP laptop for a beautiful price. I spent too much.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you did.
Yes, and I turn it on, and it turns off too quickly. I'm sure there's something I can do to it or for it. And furthermore, there are not a screen full of apps, those, you know, websites or whatever, like there are on my tablet and telephone. So I'm sure I can do something in both of those cases to, I don't think it's a repair. It's a loose nut in front of the keyboard, most likely. Tell me what I can do, please.
Okay, let's back up a step. Is this a Windows computer?
Yes.
Okay. So you have a Windows computer with nothing on the screen.
A lot of beautiful pictures of wildlife and stuff.
Sure. But no apps.
Correct.
Okay. In the lower left, there should be the Windows icon. If you click on that, do you get a menu with that you can scroll down and see all your applications?
Okay. That I would have knowledge of if it were there. It isn't. It's just a whole bunch of two furry animals right now.
The right side,
there's a couple of little things.
The right side should have the clock and other items in the system tray. How about hitting the Windows key on the keyboard? It sounds like the screensaver's on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hitting the Windows key on the keyboard should bring up the Windows menu also.
Okay. Okay. Let me hit that key. Oh, it did. It did.
So it could be just the desktop is empty. There aren't any icons on it yet, which is a little weird.
Correct. There are not. I'm almost fearful of playing with it because I'm going to get myself in trouble. But I see many icons in a square, a black square, but they are not scattered all over the screen when I turn it on.
Right. When you buy a brand new Windows machine, you don't see much of anything on the desktop. Those things are all in that menu. So once you bring up that menu by hitting the Windows key, you should be able to scroll down that list on the left and see whatever is installed on that machine. And if there are not a lot of things installed on that machine, you can always go to the Windows Store, which should be one of the squares on the right when you bring up the Windows key, and install whatever you want to install.
You can right-click on the desktop to bring up a menu to allow you to show the My Computer on the desktop.
Yeah,
the
easiest way to get to it is down in that little corner where there's a little window that you can type in desktop icons. And that'll allow you to open up a screen where you can then select My Computer if you want your control panel, your network. And you can have those displayed on your desktop.
And you can start putting stuff there. We joke about that in the Apple world, too, is that somebody at Apple hates icons. And there'll be a system version where the desktop is completely empty, not even your hard drive.
Right.
And then the next system version, they're all back.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe somebody at Microsoft now, it's a new computer, it's probably Windows 11. There's absolutely no icons on the desktop because they hate icons on the desktop.
Right.
I have the black screen opened with 15 to 20 icons. Simply right now, I want to take all those icons and put them on the desktop. Is there?
You have to do it one at a time. Right click on each icon and say, create shortcut on desktop.
Ah, each one individually.
Each one individually.
Okay. And secondly, I turn the computer on and within 30 seconds, it's turning off. I'm sure there's some adjustments.
Rich, is it turning off or is it starting to show those pictures?
Or the screen goes black.
I'm sorry. Yes. So what happens?
It turns off, whatever I'm looking at.
It powers?
It powers down or you just get a black screen?
Powers down.
Then you need to send that machine back.
Yeah.
There's something not right with that machine if it turns off. If it actually powers all the way down 30 seconds after you turn it on.
There are sleep settings that you can change that
wouldn't go that fast.
Yeah, if it's just the screen going to sleep, if you can right-click on the desktop and go into the properties. You can change how long before the screen goes to sleep. But if the computer itself is actually powering off, there's something really wrong with it.
Yeah, okay, the power light, the light underneath the main power button turns off. That means a total shutdown?
Right, so if the screen goes black and you hit some keys, does it come back?
Haven't tried that. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Try that. If it comes back, then it's just the screensaver. You can adjust how long it takes for the screensaver to start. If it's actually turning off, then you really need to send it back. Mm-hmm. Or you don't have it plugged in and the battery's out of charge.
Gotcha. It is plugged in. I think I got a percentage down here.
At both ends.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks, Rich. Good luck.
I'm a supporter. Thank you.
Thank you. That's what we like to hear. Yeah, it can be kind of disconcerting.
Yeah, I mean,
to get
especially
a new machine after you've had one for a while and you've got it arranged the way you like. You buy a new machine, there's nothing on the desktop.
Because I think the minimum for it to come on and just sit idle is like 5 minutes. And then, you know, then it would go to, into a power down mode.
Right.
I mean, there's other settings for screensavers like 1 and 2 and 3 minutes, but usually power down is usually 5 minutes or more of inactivity.
Well, and it's usually 5 minutes when it's like at 5% or something like that, it'll shut down, which is why I'm thinking maybe his battery's not charged, but if it's plugged in,
it should be fully charged.
It should, well, whether it's fully charged or not, it should still not turn off that way. But, you know, it, and if it is indeed a brand new machine, what we didn't ask him is if he bought it from HP or he got it from somebody. But if it's if it is indeed a brand new machine, it's certainly not set to turn off after 30 seconds.
Oh, heck no.
So it sounds to me like there's something
wrong with
not right with that computer.
Mm-hmm. And it should still be under warranty, too.
And it, certainly if he just bought it, it should be under warranty. So he should not have a problem returning it and getting a, another one in its place. You do have to understand that when you get a brand new computer, it is a tabula rasa. It is a blank slate. You don't have, you usually don't have much of anything on the desktop. It used to, you know, when you've set up your machine, you definitely, you know, you put a bunch of things on the desktop. Most of you put too much stuff on the desktop, which slows down starting, by the way, and running. By the way,
but I know where it is then.
But you know where it is. my beloved bride does that. She puts a lot of things on her desktop. And I get it. But if you're going to put things on the desktop, put them in folders. Make a folder on the desktop and put it in that. And by the way, most backup programs don't back up the desktop. So everything you put on the desktop is not being backed up. So you need to be aware of that as well. I hate to say it, but there it is. You need to be aware of these things. There's no magic, unfortunately.
But why do I need to back up?
Exactly. Oh, you only need to back up the day before your computer dies. Or you know, if you're one of those people, the hour before your computer dies. I'm fine with that, too.
We've had customers that say, well, I don't have anything important on my computer, except some pictures.
Right.
Okay, then you have something important on your computer, and you should back it up.
Right. Those documents that you would hate to have to recreate.
Yeah.
And, oh, those programs.
You can always have another kid and take more baby pictures.
That's right. You don't need those original baby pictures or the pictures
convince
your
grandparents. The wife
that. Who cares? Yeah. You know, they're gone now. Too bad. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Macedon, New York. Hiya, Dave. What's up?
Hi, Nick. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Yeah, I've got a Chromebook. It's getting kind of old. It's out of date. It's so old that it doesn't have the Linux or the Android on it. And so I'm obviously looking for another one, a new one. And I don't have to run a whole lot. I do a mail merge. I'd like to do it probably on the Linux part of it. But my main question is, what about these... I guess they're combo things. They're not very big, and the keyboard folds back around, and they got a touch screen, so they're more like a tablet.
Yeah, those are often called convertibles, some of them the screen will actually detach from the keyboard, and they get called detachables.
Right.
Yeah.
Google has a nice website that lets you search the different Chromebooks they know about. With different specs, different screen sizes, different brands, and it's interesting. The high end Pixelbook we used to joke about was $2,000 when the big thing about Chromebooks was that they were pretty cheap. But you get a super high end Google one, it's going to be a lot.
Yeah, but yes, you can get the nice thing. Okay, so the nice thing about those. Flippables, right? The things that fold around. So the right, those flippables, I guess. What did you call them? Convertibles.
Convertible.
All right. Is that if you are running a tablet program, an Android tablet program, you have a tablet, and if you want to write or use the keyboard for anything at all, you have a keyboard. So that's a really nice feature. I have one of those, and I have used it extensively in both tablet mode and keyboard, tablet mode and keyboard mode, I guess is the way to put that. And they work great. And you can get them from, I don't know, $500 up. And I mean up. Take a look at them. Dave said, there's google.com/Chromebook, which will show you those. And then there's google.com/Chromebook/shop, where you can actually buy them. So, and you can look at the faster Chromebooks or the more, even more high end Chromebooks. And you can filter by type. So you can say the convertibles or the detachables. Mm-hmm. And what screen size you like. Sadly, for me, the minimum these days is about 14 inches, I have to say. 13, I suppose. And you can search by brand if you care. That gives you... Sorry, go ahead.
They're not just Google, then?
No, no, no. You will see all kinds of brands. You will see Google, of course. Acer, Asus, HP, Lenovo, Samsung. So you'll see them all on that, you know... Google just wants you to buy a Chromebook. They don't really care
who makes it, manufactures it.
So yeah, you can pick any one of those. In fact, right now I'm looking at the.
They also have Chrome boxes on there too. Well, the Chrome Base, they call it, an all-in-one desktop computer.
Uh huh. Okay. Kind of another question on the side of that. They come with Linux on there, but. Do they have a distro on there, or you have to add your own, or how does that work?
Well, there's a built-in version of Linux that you can activate, and it is essentially their own, I believe it's a Debian-derived, which is the same as Ubuntu and dozens of others, a derived thing, and it works great. On mine... Now, you know, you want to have a minimum of 8 gig of RAM, and of course, a faster machine is better. But I regularly run Thunderbird and a couple of other programs that I use. So I do my mail on my Chromebook in the same program I use on my Linux box. So it all works identically for me. And of course, it's all IMAP, so it's all the same files. But so I would suggest that if you have specific Windows programs you like to run, take a look at the specs for those. You're really going to want at least 8 gigs of RAM in your Chromebook, and the more the merrier, and a larger
storage drive
size, the SSD that you use. 32 gig seems to be the standard these days, so that's not a bad size.
And a lot of them will have an SD card slot that you can add as a second drive, or they'll also take USB drives.
Right.
Right. Okay. The only thing I plan on, the hardest thing I probably run on there would be some kind of a mail merge program for the Linux. I'd like to run kind of a cheap add-on or AutoCAD thing, but I haven't really found one, just 2D. But I only would like that for just very small programs, nothing big.
There's a couple of mail merge options available right in Google Docs.
Right.
To take, basically, put your mailing list on a sheet and your email in the doc word processor version.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just tell it, take these names and addresses and put them into these variables in the document, and it does it for you. So you don't even need to buy something separate to do that.
There are third-party plugins to automate the process, but you can do it yourself, too.
Google Docs.
Google Docs will do that. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. I guess that's about it. Thank you.
Yeah, have fun. Good luck with your new Chromebook.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Thanks. Yeah, they're, Chromebooks are much, much more capable than people think they are, as opposed to something that just runs a browser.
And Autodesk has a version of Fusion 360 specifically for Chromebooks.
Right. So.
And if you say you're a student, it's free.
Right. Well, you have to be able to prove you're a student. You have to have
an Edu email address, an Edu probably.
Email address.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, there's no. I was going to say no limit. There's hardly any limit to what you can do with a Chromebook these days.
Yeah.
You may have to do it with a different program from what you're mostly used to, but you can do dang near anything.
Yeah, it's just like anything else. You just got to learn something new, like we've said about cars. Right. You know, you get a different car. It still drives the same. It's just the buttons might be in a different place and a different way of doing things.
Right. So, you really have so many options now with a Chromebook. Again, now that, you know, are you buying the $200 Chromebook or are you buying the $700 Chromebook? Yeah. That has a lot to do with...
That factors in a little.
Right, all right. But the reality is that you can, with the right Chromebook, do dang near anything you can think to do. So, if when you factor in the ease of update, the security, all of that stuff.
One thing, though, folks have to take in consideration, though, is when you do get a Chromebook, you also have to be able to do it wirelessly. So,
right.
You've got to have a router that supports wireless connection.
Or accommodating neighbors.
That too. But I wouldn't rely on it. But definitely, that is one factor into it. So if you've got an old hub that doesn't support, which I don't know too many of them, or don't know how to turn on wireless, you've got to have wireless connection to get a Chromebook to talk to the internet.
Yep.
So that's one other factor that you've got to take into consideration.
You can use it offline.
Yeah.
But at some point, it will want to
connect
and put that stuff back up on the net. So you Chromebooks are much more usable than people think they are. Most of the ads you see are people saying, "Well, you know, I must run X." Well, okay. In that case, you can't use a Chromebook. Or if you must run X because you don't want to learn something else, that's a little different.
Totally.
I must run X. So there's no magic in any computer program. All of them have equivalents. Whether you want to learn those equivalents, that's entirely up to you, but they are there.
Well, that's where I say a Chromebook essentially is like a dumb terminal. It's got to connect to the internet to really do anything. Yes, you can do stuff just like in the old days when we used to type up emails and then use the dial-up modem to connect, and then it would shoot up all
blue
your emails. It would sit there and shoot them all up, and then you'd disconnect.
Right.
But you didn't stay connected. The only way you can get connected, you know, do stuff with Chromebook is literally be connected to the internet.
Pretty nice stuff all the way around, I got to say. If you're looking for a new machine, it's not a bad alternative. Again, depending on what it is you want to do. Excuse me. All right. So that music tells us that our first hour of this show is over. But do not despair. Put down that knife. There will be an entire another hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right. A whole another hour of sound bites is on the way with more Dave Enright, almost enough Steve Ray, and too much Nick Francesco. You need to take a quick break. You can take a bio break, grab a snack, and come on back, because we're going to take a little bit of a break, and then we'll be back with a lot more. Again, of the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's 59 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Them.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites.
Still.
That's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Still.
Still. And, of course, while I read the news, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. On Wednesday, this is interesting. On Wednesday, Google announced that its Chrome browser will now offer users the ability to use a virtual credit card number in online payment on the web. These virtual card numbers allow you to keep your real credit card number safe when you buy something online, since they can be easily revoked if a merchant system gets hacked. A number of credit card issuers already offer these virtual credit card numbers, mine does, but they are probably far less mainstream than they should be. Google says these virtual cards will roll out to the U.S. later this summer. Capital One, Visa, MasterCard, and American Express will be supported at launch. Having support from the networks is definitely a big deal here, because trying to get every individual card issuer on board would be a difficult task. The new feature will be available on Chrome on desktop and Android first, with iOS support rolling out later. This is a landmark step in bringing the security of virtual cards to as many consumers as possible, said Arnold Goldberg, the vice president and general manager of payments at Google. Shoppers using Chrome on desktop and Android can enjoy a fast checkout experience when shopping online while having the peace of mind knowing that their payment information is protected. From the user perspective, this new autofill option will simply enter the virtual credit card's details for you, including the CVV that you can never remember for your physical cards, and then you can manage the virtual cards and see your transactions at pay.google.com. While these virtual cards are typically used for one-time purchases, you will also be able to use these cards for subscriptions as well. Since this is Google, some users will obviously worry that the company will use these additional data about your purchase habits. But Google says it will not use any of this information for ad targeting purposes.
Yeah.
Does this sound like something you'd trust Google for? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Until it gets hacked.
Until it gets hacked.
I mean, I'm surprised nowadays, though, how much more, so many more places now are doing PayPal. Because they also have a guarantee that if you get, you know, you try something on PayPal and all of a sudden you find out, oh, I've been stiffed, they'll go back and get your money back for you.
Yep.
Well, we've run into a problem as a merchant with PayPal that PayPal almost always sides with the buyer.
Right.
And so we've had a couple of cases where we ship something to somebody, we have signed signatures that they were received, the person disputes it, and they get their money back. And and so we try not to take PayPal anymore because of that. But a lot of that's also the credit card fees are skyrocketing. Some companies hide the credit card fees by raising their prices. Other companies have a credit card fee line item on their receipt. And so if you can pay with not a credit card, you know, Stripe or Venmo, PayPal started adding fees because didn't they get bought by someone recently?
Yeah, somebody.
And so PayPal is now taking fees. Venmo's a little tricky. If the transaction looks commercial, they'll charge the buyer a fee. And so when we have people buy stuff from us, don't say it's a commercial transaction.
Right.
Yeah, that was a cable or something.
Yeah.
And so trying to eliminate those fees. We often joke that in our next life, we want to be a credit card processor.
Oh, they make the money.
They make the money. They have no offices. They have no physical presence anywhere. They just take some money from this person. I'll take 3% and pass the rest of it on to that person.
Yeah.
Yeah, middleman.
Yeah.
I use PayPal for Ask Nick, and I've only had a couple of people ask for refunds, and I give them to them.
It was a huge boon for the freelance market. Yeah. Especially when the mobile readers came out.
Yep.
I used to carry around the Kerchunker.
Oh yeah.
When I went on house calls, I'd have to have the carbon form and the Kerchunker and take a physical copy. And then you never knew if the credit card was good until you submitted all the paperwork and then wait a week.
Right.
Well, we used to use on our phones the Cube, that little device that you can plug into it and then run the app swipe the card through.
My wife does the same thing with Square.
Yeah.
She uses Square and at Market, and it's
we use Intuit's because they feeds into QuickBooks really easily.
Yeah, I have tap to pay on my phone, and I both my credit card and my PayPal credit card use one-time numbers.
Yeah,
so when I buy anything, if I can pay with that, I will do so, because even if somebody skims it, they get nothing.
That card, yeah.
Right. That number is gone.
Doesn't work anymore.
Doesn't exist. Yeah.
My problem is when I'm looking at two receipts that have random credit card numbers on it, I got to remember which card it was so I can reconcile it.
Right.
Oops.
Right. So, yeah, in my case, of course, if it's on my regular credit card, it's fine. If it's on my PayPal, it's
fortunately, I got one MasterCard, one Visa, so that helps.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, yeah, a lot of people are very leery about paying with their phone. But with all of the current safeguards I have with PayPal and with my bank, and those one-time numbers, I feel pretty secure.
Well, on PayPal,
and you can't skim my phone, because until I actively say go ahead and tap
with your passcode or fingerprint or face or whatever your biometric is,
right. So until I say it's okay to tap now, you can skim my phone all day long. Ain't nothing going
to
happen.
Yeah, no, I happened to order something for my wife, and it was like, 6-8 weeks went by. And they sent me a notice back, because I kind of forgot about it, figuring overseas shipment and all that. And they go, did you receive this? And I go, no. And they go, all right, let us dispute it. Then I got about maybe 5-6 days later, a notice back from PayPal said, yeah, we found out that that's a scam. We're refunding your money back to you.
Yeah, they're very good about that stuff.
Last Christmas,
they're much better for the user than for the vendor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last Christmas, I bought something from the Royal Post Office. They had some Star Trek stamps I had to get for Shirley.
You had to.
And so I used PayPal for international payments. And then PayPal charged an international ATM fee.
Wow.
That I got mad at.
Sure.
Not just the exchange fee. It was £22 in the U.S.
Right.
But there's a company called Privacy.com that offers one-time credit card numbers that you can attach to your current accounts if your cards don't already offer that. And they have a neat plan where they have a free service where you get 12 credit card numbers a month, which is a lot from a lot of people.
Yeah.
One of the other things they do, which is kind of neat, is they will lock a card to a vendor. So this credit card only works at Amazon. This credit card only works at Wegmans. And so if someone steals the number and tries to use it somewhere else, it won't work because it has to be at that vendor.
Right. That's not bad.
No, that's a handy way to do it.
Yep.
Like you say, they try you going somewhere else, another department store or something else, and rack up some big bucks and decline. That would be a big savings. Big savings.
Right. So yeah, there's a lot of that's out there, and I'll tell you, the peace of mind knowing that these are all one-time codes makes me very happy. I had my car fixed the other day, and I asked my garage guy, can I pay with tap? And I took out my phone. And he looked at it and he said, I don't think that works here. And I said, should work, because there's the tap to pay icon. So it should work. And he said, well, I don't think this is going to say, well, let's try it. And if it doesn't work. So we put in the thing and it worked, and I did it. And he got all excited. And he said, how did you do that? And I told him, it's my Android phone. It's Google Pay. I have Google Pay. I have an Android phone.
Okay. Then you can set it up.
And I happen to use PayPal. Oh, I have PayPal. Okay. And you get this one-time number. Oh, that's great. And so he said, well, I'm going to try this everywhere now. I said, you should.
Created a monster.
Right. Anywhere that you can tap to pay, theoretically, you can use your phone, whether it's Apple Pay or Google Pay, or I suppose Samsung Pay or anybody else's Pay. As long as you can tap to pay, they all work.
The Apple credit card gives you more percentage back if you do the electronic payment rather than the physical card. So I'm always trying to do that. So I did the same thing with a vendor at the hobby store. And so I don't think we take Apple Pay. Well, there's a symbol on your reader. Let's just try it. It worked. Yeah.
That's right.
It's well, a lot not of about, them don't have a clue.
Right, yeah. Right. And because it used to be, and I think this was a mistake on Apple's part. Well, it wasn't because it worked. But it used to be you get these signs that said Apple Pay. We take Apple Pay.
Yeah, before that you had the MasterCard logo signs.
Right. Visa, yeah. And that, now you've got the Apple Pay thing. So if people don't have the Apple Pay sign, they think they can't take Apple Pay.
Yep.
Well, Apple Pay is just tap to pay.
Yep.
Google Pay is just tap to pay. Samsung Pay, just tap to pay.
Did I
say pay enough?
Yeah, the exception is Walmart. They only take Walmart Pay, which directly debits your checking account.
Right.
It's not a credit card.
I prefer a debit card.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
a credit card.
Yeah,
there's a little more protections on a credit card, though.
Right. Well, depends on who your credit card is.
Yeah.
My debit card has all the same protections as my credit card.
Same with mine, CMB. Yeah. And you know, if I get unusual charges, all of a sudden they're calling me up and saying, "Hey, this is the fraud department.
Yep.
Is this one okay?"
Yep.
We just want to hear from you, and you got to call back within a few hours.
I get text messages all the time. I just paid my taxes, and I got a message saying, "You seem to have written an awfully large check.
Mm-hmm.
Is this really you?" And I answer back, "Yes, thank you, it's me."
One Christmas, my bank let the $500 charge go through, but stopped the $50 charge.
There you go.
I'm glad they're checking, but I wish it would have been the other way around. They were both legitimate. But
right.
And you don't have to worry about credit card numbers running out with all these one-time card numbers. There's over a trillion possible combinations for each credit card vendor.
Right.
Because there's so many digits on the card.
Right. And in addition, they can recycle.
Yeah.
Because they're just one-time numbers.
And you don't know which number it's going to use anyway, so being random.
Right. So... The current
16-digit card has 10 to the 16th or 10 quadrillion possible combinations.
Right. So they don't really need to reuse them just yet. So there's lots and lots of those that are out there. Having those protections. Look, you should still check your statements every single day. And since most companies have their statements online, banks and credit cards have their statements online, it takes 2 minutes to check.
Yeah.
And it doesn't hurt to do that. I do that. I check.
You can even do it on your phone if you want.
Do it on your whether you do it on your phone or on your laptop or your desktop. I do it twice a day just to look.
I did it just now.
There you go.
I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, you're soaking in it.
Yeah,
I'm old. But at any rate, it's Madge, her name I think was Madge.
Yep.
The idea is that it takes just a minute and it helps keep you more secure. How is that a bad deal? You know, you're sitting in front of your computer anyway, or you're sitting with your phone or your tablet anyway while you're waiting for Netflix to stop spinning. Go ahead and take a look. It's literally that quick.
Because that's the big thing. They're any way and every way they can imagine to try to get your information.
That's right.
And you've got to do due diligence to keep it protected.
And as I say, every day, we hand our credit cards to the lowest paid employees in America. And that's a temptation. And while most people are immune to that temptation, not all are.
Right.
And so, you know, it behooves you whenever I use my physical credit card, and particularly when I hand it to someone, I then immediately
check. Well, that's where some places that I've gone to are now either having the displays on the table.
Terminal at the table, yeah.
Yeah.
Or they'll come to you with a portable.
Right.
One time my card was lost is when I had to hand it to a wait staff who walked away with it. Not that I'm blaming them, but.
Right.
I'm blaming them.
you kind of have to. It's someone in that store, one way or the other. Oh, here, I'll run that for you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then never to be seen again.
Right.
I can walk up to the register myself.
Right. So, yeah, there's and of course, when you pay at a gas station, you have to worry about skimmers and things like that. I don't worry about that because I pay with my phone. I tap to pay even at the gas station because it's, again, that one-time code. Go ahead and steal the one-time code.
Knock See yourself how far out. It gets you.
Exactly right. Don't care. Take it. So it's easy enough to do. Setting it up on your phone takes a few minutes, whether it's Google Pay or Apple Pay or Samsung Pay. Setting it up only takes a few minutes, and all you have to do from then on is activate it and tap. Done. And like I said, it gives me peace of mind.
Sometimes it takes me longer to bring up the tap to pay screen than it does for the pay to even work.
That's right. But there's always still, it's still to me new enough that I get excited when I see that it worked.
Yep.
Well, that's one thing that I also use is that key ring program. And they changed that around too, because before I used to get tired of scrolling through all those little, you know, because with Keyring, it's an app that you put on your phone. Instead of carrying all those stupid little fobs, you can scan them and put them into this program called Key Fob or Key. And it keeps track of them all for you. So before you had to go through this whole list. So if you're going to Wegmans, though, you had to scroll all the way down to the bottom to select Wegmans. Well, now they're dividing the screen up to little logos. So you can just tap the logo and boom, pop it. And then you can have them scan it. Because, again, a lot of stores, their scanners don't quite catch the barcodes yet.
A lot of them aren't clean enough, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And your phone's glass screen is reflective. And you have to have the right barcode scanner to be able to scan on a glass screen.
Right. Yeah.
Amazon has a new thing that they're starting to roll out, which is that you can scan receipts and get cash back. You can get cash on your Amazon gift card, which you can then, of course, only spend at Amazon. But who doesn't spend money at Amazon?
Yeah.
So you can scan pretty much any receipt. My daughter does that. She's got half a dozen different apps that she scans receipts into.
Yep.
And gets money on for that. And yes, they are, each and every one of them is gathering information about your
That's
shopping
habits.
That's
just a fact of life.
And if you are willing to give them that information, they will give you money.
And that's where
that's the transaction there.
But that's where, you know, if you're going to do something like that, folks, that's where I highly recommend, if you don't have an account, then go ahead and do it. But set up a dummy Google account for email that all this junk that, you know, you'll get inundated with from them, you know, going out there and all of a sudden now you're going to get 16 replies from an insurance company because you're just looking at an ad and boom, now they're inundating you with it. It can all go to this one stupid email account that you really don't care about.
And if you make it a Gmail account, Google will filter out a lot of that stuff for you.
And
the one thing that annoys me most, the one thing that really annoys me most, is when I get an ad, an email from Amazon recommending something I just bought.
Yep. You should know
what?
I bought it.
Right. Right.
Yep.
Makes me crazy.
I kind of want to try one of the Amazon stores where you just walk in, pick up stuff, and leave.
Yeah.
And it knows what you bought because there's a million cameras everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I did.
There was an idea in the early days to put RFID tags on every product, so you could do that. And as you walked out the door, they scanned everything in your cart.
Right.
But that would cost too much.
Right.
Yeah, I'm getting inundated right now. Same thing. I just ordered this one planter. It's what they call a pot within a pot for self-watering.
Sure.
And I ordered it on Amazon. I found this place on Amazon that sells them. I got it. Excuse me. And now I'm getting hit. Do you want to buy this? You want to buy it? I already did. I'm waiting for it to come.
Yeah.
It's like, really?
Yeah, always. I met the guy who patented that.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Back decades ago. He said, yeah, my wife, we were going to go on vacation. My wife said no because her plants would have died while we were on vacation because she wasn't there to water them. So I invented this thing, and I thought, what the hell? Is it patentable? It was.
Sure.
I did. Now I'm retired.
Yep.
He said, so for me, the aphorism is mother is the necessity for invention.
Yeah, this was just, they're like in an old Adobe clay pot.
Yeah.
And he's got three different sizes. And then this beautiful white clear glass container that you set this thing in. And they've got two little spouts that you can easily fill it up with water. And because I had a Christmas cactus plant. And I had that in an old, smaller one from my African violets. And it was starting to get root bound, choked. Yeah. Well, I bought that pot. And now all of a sudden this Christmas cactus is going like crazy. And it's easy to water.
Yep. His first one was just a plain planter, square planter.
Uh-huh.
And then he created a V-shaped thing that fit in it. Holes in the bottom, filled the V with the dirt and the plants.
Mm-hmm.
And then the water would, and he could fill that bottom planter with water. And that was the prototype. And it worked while they were on vacation, so he patented it.
Yeah, it just absorbs through the material and keeps the plants watered, happy, and away you go. And heck, I fill this container up, and it's good for at least a month.
Yeah.
At least a month.
Yeah. And now you can buy things that will alert you when it's dry.
Yeah. Yep.
Send you a little thing to your phone or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you can do pretty much whatever you want. There are so many. There's
little gadgets to make our lives easier.
Yeah, yeah. You really got to be aware that some of that stuff is not secure, however. So be very aware of that.
I would say most of it.
Most of it. The Internet of Things, you hear that a lot. It is not secure. One of the things I keep getting from Google is, are you using the Internet of Things? No. Why not? Because it isn't secure.
If you do have to get one, put it on your guest network.
Right.
And it helps a little bit.
Exactly. All right. We are halfway through our second hour, so we're going to take a slight break. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Don't go away. More Dave Enright, more Steve Ray, more Nick Francesco, more you. As I said, it's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, that's so much easier. We are Soundbites. Okay, this is... I love this story, too. Windows 10 version 20H2 and version 1909 have both reached the end of servicing, or EOS. And they reached that this past Tuesday. Microsoft has released upgrades for version 1909 and 20H2. EOS applies to Windows 10 20H2 devices running the Home, Pro, Pro Edition, and Pro for Workstations Edition. That's pretty much all of them, by the way. These devices will no longer receive monthly security and quality updates that contain protection from the latest security threats. To continue receiving security and quality updates, Microsoft recommends updating to the latest versions of Windows 10 or Windows 11. For version 1909, all editions are now showing at end of service. Microsoft says the May 2022 security update released on May 10th is the last update available for these versions. After that date, devices running these editions will no longer receive monthly security and quality updates containing protections from the latest security threats. Microsoft has also warned that if you don't install the latest feature update, the company will upgrade for you to help keep you protected and productive. Microsoft said you would be able to choose a convenient time to restart and complete the update process. Windows Update will automatically initiate a feature update for Windows 10 consumer devices and non-managed business devices that are at or within several months of reaching end of servicing. This keeps your device supported and receiving monthly updates that are critical to security and ecosystem health. For these devices, you will be able to choose a convenient time for your device to restart and complete the upgrade. So How happy are you with this convenience feature? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
So they're going to do it no matter what. Whether you want it or not, you're still going to be the guinea pig because you don't own the software.
Stop
you're
pretending Windows belongs to you. It does not. It belongs to Microsoft. You're just using it.
Well, then I should charge them rent for being on my machines.
You should. You absolutely should. People don't, but they should. You know, I've got on my Linux box, I've got thousands of programs installed. And I chose each and every one of them. You can to clarify, you can install desktop versions of most distributions, and they will automatically install things like LibreOffice and word processor.
Xubuntu is a perfect example that you and I are both using,
right.
And that comes standard. LibreOffice comes standard. Thunderbird comes as a mail server. You can put Chrome on there if you want.
Right. It comes with Firefox.
Yeah.
But you can also put up a bare bones version and only install the products you want. The point being, you choose.
Yep.
And when you choose whether or not to update. You choose what and when to install. You choose how far back you want to be on your distribution because it's yours. It belongs to you.
And
Microsoft? Nope. It's not yours.
And they don't use you as a guinea pig. I mean, the updates that I've gotten are all there. Like you said, they run in the background, and they're just to patch. Because it's a big community out there that's working together to keep everybody safe. So if they find a flaw, they're putting it out there and saying, hey, you want to do this? You have the choice whether to do that update or not.
Right.
So far more control than just Microsoft saying, well, yeah, you're running out of the expiration date, and no matter whether you like it or not, we're going to update your machine. And if it bricks it, oh, well, we're sorry.
Oh,
that's too bad. So sad. You should have backed up all your stuff, which
right.
Most folks should have been doing anyways.
Right. So there's just a fundamental philosophical difference between Windows, the Mac, and Linux. Which is, in Windows' case, you get to borrow the software. In Linux' case, it's yours. Do what you want with it. In Apple's case,
comes with the computer. And you can download it for free later on.
Right.
But it only runs on Apple hardware.
Right.
Unless you're really good at reverse engineering the BIOS.
Right. There used to be Hackintoshes, but I don't think those.
They still exist for Intel, but I don't. Right. I haven't seen anyone that's done one for
the M1 processor.
Right.
Who makes an M1 processor board except Apple?
Right. Other than Apple, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm hoping though by May, the end of this year.
That's not May, but I don't know how you were.
I don't know why I was thinking May.
Are you like on the
this
Julian
is May.
Calendar? What is it?
No, this is May right now. And by, here we are in May. By the end of the year, I'd say at least 3 out of my 5 machines will be onto Unix.
Good.
I'm just getting so tired of it messing things up and bricking stuff and getting to, you just get all this other stuff working. And then all of a sudden it stops. I've found so many other, that's why I say 3 out of the 5, because one of my ham computers, I'm slowly working to see if I can get some of this software, because they're all not quite moving to Unix or Linux.
The real problem is not the major publishers, but the minor publishers.
Yeah, that's where
many
I'm running
only,
into issue.
Right. Many of them only create their products for one operating system.
And two of the major products, systems, programs I use for my ham radio stuff is either Windows or Mac based.
Right.
And the one guy, and again, this goes all to support. You know, if people, instead of just freeloading and just taking the software and using it and saying, oh, too bad about the guy that's, you know, busting his butt, developing it and coming up and improving it and everything else, you know, support them. Because that keeps better software constantly coming out.
Right. And you will find, look, that's one of the reasons I said when I was talking about Chromebooks, unless you are running a program that specifically requires an operating system. And that's less about the major programs than the minor programs. Mm-hmm. Like you've got the ham radio program.
Yep.
That is only available for Windows. That's a good reason to continue running Windows.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or not, that's why you
continue
to run.
Which I don't like.
Right, right. But I'm in the opposite situation. I have either Chromebooks or Unix, Linux machines. I have one Mac. The only Windows I have, well, my wife has a Windows machine. That is sacrosanct. We don't
even go there.
We don't go there. But I do have a VM of Windows that I can boot up and test things on if I want.
Virtual machine, folks.
Virtual machine on my Linux box. But beyond that, I don't run any Windows anything anymore, and almost everything I run is Linux. So I can add whatever programs I want, move whatever. I'm writing a lot of code now in Python for lots of little utilities that I run things for, and they run on Macs, they run on Windows, they run on Linux. So I can run them anywhere I need to. And most, you know, honestly, most of my machines these days are Raspberry Pis. So they're all running Ubuntu. No, they're all running a version of Linux,
Well, the same with my wife's. I've got the opposite. My wife's machine, I could very easily move over to Linux because I've already showed it to her. And as long as she has her icons out on the desktop, she's good to go. She's editing pictures and she surfs the internet.
Right.
Chromebook would even do her.
Right.
But, you know, for doing it, I got her the bigger screen and all that. So the Linux machine for her is going to be a cakewalk.
Right.
I mean, it's, I could, because she goes, it doesn't look much different. You even got the menus, because I show her how you could click on it on the little Windows button there. It pops up and there's all the menus.
The menu button, not the Windows button.
Yeah, yeah, well,
they're very careful about that.
Like the Windows button, you can click on it and it scrolls up and it's got all the little side menus and programs. She goes, that's not much different. I go, it's not. It's not. Oh, and it won't crash and lose your photos like it did during the fall or the winter when we lost 18,000 photos.
Right.
Because it wrote the photos off, but when it did the update, it didn't bring them back.
Right.
And I did not have a very happy wife.
No, and that's a problem. That's a distinct problem right there.
Yeah. So now, but it did create a monster in that. I've got two other places now. She has the habit now that when she comes in from shooting photos for the day, and she can shoot, you know, 300 to 400 photos.
Sure.
First thing before she even starts cropping or anything else, you first copy it off the little SD drive onto your desktop. From there, you then copy it to two other different locations.
Right. Yep.
So she's got it in three spots. So we're not losing it this time.
Right. That's the way it's supposed to
work. I
want to
sleep with both eyes.
That's right. You don't want to have to spend an entire day saying, what happened here? Let me see if I can.
I did. I spent a day and a half in this other recovery program trying to get it back. But that's what happened, though. Exactly, though. They were written off, but they never got copied back.
Yep. Yep.
It's like, son of a gun.
And that's why everybody listen to what happened to Dave. If it can happen to Dave, it can happen to you. Back up. There's nothing that breaks our heart more than I lost all my pictures.
Well, see, that's where
there's nothing easier than back it up.
That's why I take it for granted, because for so long now, both my emails, any documents, any photos, and that, for easily, close to 10 years now? Mm-hmm. Everything's been going up to the cloud. So I don't even think twice about it. I don't worry about, what was it? Just last year, when my one machine upstairs died, It was like, okay. So I got to reinstall a few programs. I didn't lose any photos, didn't lose any emails. All I had to do was reinstall the Windows on it, logged into my Google account.
And everything came back.
Everything's right there.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I have 1, 2, 3 main places and 2 minor places that all my pictures, all my documents, everything goes to. There would have to be a major catastrophe across the world for me to lose all of my data, at which point I'm probably not that concerned about my data.
Well, that's why I'm now going to, because we've got an Amazon Prime account.
Yep, yep.
I'm going to set it up on her machine to back up her photos to there.
What, for those of you who don't know, if you are an Amazon Prime customer, which is, what, $130 a year, if you're an Amazon Prime customer, you have unlimited photo storage.
They keep adding more and more features to make me keep re-upping the subscription.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, we originally got it for the free shipping for the stuff my wife buys for market. And then that came with Prime Video, and now it comes with free unlimited video
photos?
Backup and everything else that goes along with it. It's like, yes, please, keep piling free stuff on me that I'm already paying for. Thank you.
Yeah.
First run TV shows?
Yes.
Did you watch Upload?
Not yet. It's on my... I have a list of programs I would probably never...
I think they're in the
third season now, Nick. Did you guys watch 1883 yet?
No. We don't watch it. I don't watch television anymore. I have a list of books that I will never read. I have a list of television shows I will never watch.
1883 was good.
I currently have to live to about 180, assuming nobody writes another book or puts out another
movie. Burgess Meredith in the basement and break your glasses?
Right? Yes. Exactly. Exactly. Me and Burgess. Time Enough. No, what's it called? Time Enough?
Time Enough. Twilight Zone. It was Twilight Zone. Yeah.
But it was Time and I forget what it was called. Anyway, yes. The idea is that now they've got that other new thing where you can scan receipts.
Time Enough at Last.
Time Enough at Last. That was it. Time Enough in Love is I think Robert Heinlein book. At any rate, now they've got that thing where you can scan receipts and get money on your Amazon gift card and, you know, at this point, you're saying to yourself, well, I'm giving, you know, all these data to Amazon. That's your choice.
Mm-hmm.
That's your choice. We know they've already got it, so it doesn't much matter one way or the other at this point. As long as you know who it's going to or why it's going there, you can then make an informed choice as to whether or not you care.
Yep.
One way or the other. So.
And that's where I was saying before, set up, if you're worried about getting other junk emails and all that other stuff, just create another Google email account that you use just for junk mail.
Right. Well, and then I was having a discussion with a fella on Facebook. There's that new program that gives you a new avatar.
Oh, okay.
And it's on, it's a Russian place. So you're giving them all of these data about you from Russia. And this guy was saying, well, they've already got all the... No, maybe they don't. Maybe they do. That's not the point. The point is you now have the information to choose. If you choose to give them your data knowing that it's a Russian company, that's one thing. If you give them your data not knowing it's a Russian company, that's something else.
Yeah.
I'm just giving you the information to let you make an informed choice, not... an uninformed choice.
And if your data is breached, it's very hard to change your face.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. So what you're giving them is your biometric data.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that Apple currently and most companies can use to do facial recognition and to do facial unlock. So you're giving them those data. And if you choose to do that yourself, that is your business. God bless you. Knock yourself out. But the fact is, you've decided to give it to them,
yeah,
as opposed to doing it accidentally.
Theoretically, it stays on the phone in the secure enclave.
For that, yeah, but not if you do the thing with the Russian company. Right.
Yeah.
Then they have those data, and if they find those data somewhere else online, because biometric data doesn't change. Like you said, you can't change your face. You can shave your beard, I suppose, or grow a beard, some of us, but... Not everybody can, and not everybody will. And you know, there's those things where you can paint geometric designs on your face, which theoretically screw up facial recognition. But not a lot of people do that either. That hasn't yet become, at least,
invisible ink tattoos.
Or invisible ink tattoos, that sort of thing. So, but those, you know, tattoos are, again, a permanent way that you can be identified. And that's both good and bad, I suppose. Even invisible ones have to be visible to some spectrum. So you would be findable if that spectrum, you know, if you can, if you've got a phone that does infrared or ultraviolet or whichever, you could be tracked that way. So you just need to be aware. As long as you are making an informed decision, I don't care what decision you make.
Right.
I feel bad when you make an uninformed decision.
Yeah.
And that's all that's about. But keeping yourself safe.
Which you have to secure, do a lot more
you have to do
nowadays. I mean, you can't take things just for granted. Oh, yeah, no, that should be okay. Yeah, no, it should. And it probably isn't.
Right. And the reality is that you are now a systems administrator for your own machines, whether you like it or not, you are. And that entails a lot of stuff, including security. You know, we're talking now about exploits that will hide in the background and take over your system and then crawl through your network and take over all your other machines.
Yeah, the best of them do that now. Once they break in, they wait around a while until they find all the juiciest stuff.
Right. And then they
don't at all. You know, just sit there dormant and collecting information. Well, you know, just merrily go on your way thinking, oh, everything, yeah, it slowed down a little bit, but nothing. You know, probably the age of the machine.
The age of the machine is probably something in the background.
The internet's slowing down. Yeah. They don't do due diligence and keep, running those programs periodically. And then, again, that's where if you pay for some of these subscriptions, that will then do it automatically versus you taking the time to do it can save you a lot of frustration and grief, because then the scammer won't get in there and get your information. But again, it's how much you want to put into it. You don't take the time to do the backups. You don't take the time to create, you know, use a password manager and you get hacked. Can't say that you didn't listen to this show and we didn't warn you.
Right.
Because we've been doing it for decades, telling folks, you know, to back things up, use protection as far as guarding against viruses, spyware, malware. We've given you the tools over the years, folks. So if you choose not to do it, then you're the one that's playing Russian roulette with your data.
Right. And in terms of that, if you go to asknick.com/backup.php, you will see a whole list of all kinds of backup products, that some of which are free, some of which cost money, for every operating system, iOS, Android, Linux, Mac, Windows, including a link to pCloud. Full disclosure, if you use my pCloud link, I get a couple of bucks, and that's a lovely idea for me. So, but it also is a lovely idea for you, because pCloud is a set it and forget it. Once you get it installed and configured, you never have to think about it again. Every time you save data into those folders, they get uploaded to the cloud automatically. You don't even have to think about it. So whichever of those products you use, and there's a lot of them listed, you should be using a product. You should be doing backups.
Your hard drive will die, period.
Yeah.
Done. Yes.
Yeah, it's going to die anytime now.
Yep. And, you know, we say mean time between failure is 5 years. That means some last 10 years, some die out of the box. Where are you in that spectrum? You're playing and roulette, you know.
If your drive is 5 years old, its chance of failure is 100%.
It's exactly right. It's 20% a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And once it hits 5 years, that's 100%, folks.
SSDs aren't any more reliable than spinning drives. You'd think
they're
exactly
the same,
because there'd be no moving parts. But the way SSDs store data, it burns through the resistor to store a charge, and that wears out eventually.
And the other thing that folks don't take into account is, and most homes suffer from it from time to time are brownouts. Those right. cause extra stress and wear and tear on your machines. Even though it might flicker for a moment, or you might see the screen go dark for a moment, and then all of a sudden it boots back up, but it didn't fully shut off. Those are all stress-related mm-hmm. right. issues on your computer.
Oh, and by the way, we're supposed to have thunderstorms over the next couple yep. days. How mm-hmm. backed up are you, yeah. by the way?
I left a customer computer backing up last night.
Yeah.
When I got there this morning, it had frozen and never finished the backup.
Yeah. That happens.
We're trying to back it up before we can fix the computer because they don't have their data.
See, that's... And this is a company that is at least kind enough to do that.
Yeah.
There are those that will not. Did you back it up? Yep. Okay, I believe you. Boom.
Yeah.
Yep. Done.
We hear on the phone all the time that people are told to erase their drive and reinstall the system.
Right.
Yep.
Because that will clear up any software problems.
Yeah, and it will. Yeah. To be fair.
Yeah. And they're never warned about their backup.
Gateway used to do that all the time.
I guess erase your hard drive is supposed to trigger something in people that means you're going to lose your data.
Yeah, no.
Doesn't necessarily.
Your data are ephemeral. You can and will lose them at the drop of a hat. So back them up. You aren't paranoid enough, and you need to make sure that you can back up you can recover your data. So check your backups as well.
I had to install something the other day. There wasn't room, so I emptied the trash, and a customer got mad. Where's that stuff I was keeping in the trash?
Yeah.
Why were you keeping anything in the trash?
Right. Right. All right. That music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. And I'll even thank myself, Nick Francesco.
You're welcome, Nick.
Thank you. And all of you. And, of course, the folks here at the truly great Jazz 90.1. Like we said, we did not make our goal. And so those of you who did not pledge still have a chance to do so online at jazz901.org. Click the Donate Now button and help us stay online and stay on the air. But we will see you next week with a whole lot more of Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. It's 58 minutes after the hour. And be good to one another, will you? We will see you in just 166 hours.